SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three of what's been a fast-moving and busy weekend preview, and didn't necessarily expect to be all that full and busy, but lots to recap when it came to Chicago and Delaware with visits with Marcus and Jim Dunleavy, and a fun conversation just now with Nick Tamaro, and happy to welcome in Ed DeRosa, who finds action in the most even on the most quiet weekends, let alone midsummer when there's something happening left, right, and center. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning. Yeah, there is a $900 pick four carryover tonight at Marquee Down, so build that bankroll for the weekend.
I love it. Well, there's also, you know, you got the rescheduled stake in New York, the Saginaw today, and there's something going on all over. Last week, of course, Thursday and Friday night, there was Iowa. We turn our attention to Indiana next, and still ahead, West Virginia and Oklahoma. The regional derbies have been, and Oaks have been, very productive. The action, not just for the three-year-olds, but I really enjoyed getting Doug Anderson on the show the other day, talking about the Cornhusker upset, remembering Rita. We went over Million Preview Day as well as Delaware. How about the emergence? Marcus brought up a great point when he talked about She's a Julie. She's not, it's not just all about Red Ruby with the three-year-old fillies, Ed. She's a Julie, too. There's a lot of interesting things happening here in the shadow past the Triple Crown season and ahead of Del Mar and Saratoga.
Yeah, I don't want to say a shame necessarily. I mean, he's certainly the biggest name in training and obviously what Justified does or doesn't do on the track anymore merits headlines as a Triple Crown winner. But, you know, looking ahead as we sort of made the turn, to use golf speak, heading toward the Breeders' Cup in the wake of the Triple Crown, a lot of these divisions, you know, really pretty open and competitive. Maybe three-year-old filly, you would say Monomoy Girl is probably the biggest lead of any division other than Justify, which is a done deal as far as I'm concerned. But even, you know, in below her, for who might end up being finalists and who might go to the distaff and maybe try turf later in the year, things like that. So three-year-old filly is very compelling. And you mentioned, too, that won last weekend, and we're going to see the runner-up in the Acorn, who I think is maybe the most likely winner all weekend, in the Indiana Oaks, and Wonder Gadot's, of course, winning the Queen's Plate and Tryon Males again on dirt and the Prince of Wales. So even a division that has a clear leader, it's fascinating underneath, and then you get to the older males, and you have a horse who's going to be stretching out who might be favored in the Whitney, and Diversify and Pavel have thrown their hat in the ring of big names for the older males, and yeah, just a lot of fascinating races, and it's disappointing to have the big star maybe on the sidelines for the rest of his career, but certainly plenty to look forward to and some really competitive divisions that are going to be on display during the summer.
You know, let me take the opportunity to, Ed, before we talk about whatever caught your eye, Delaware and Indiana especially, I'm sure, but give everybody some TwinSpires blog and BrisNet report insights leading into next week. We won't talk until Friday, so Del Mar will be underway and Saratoga will be starting. But what can people use as resources via TwinSpires and BrisNet?
Yeah, great point. Thank you. Well, we are in the process today. Stuff is populating on the BrisNet plans page. So for those who like to buy in bulk, so to speak, for Del Mar and Saratoga, we'll have some plans up there, whether you use data files or past performances. definitely offering some savings for the complete meat. Meat-wise, though, from a content perspective, Scott Shapiro has joined our team full-time, and part to celebrate that, we're bringing back the Beat the Shap contest at Del Mar. It starts on opening day. Scott's going to put together a pick four every day of the meet. And if you hit the pick four and he doesn't, you split $2,000 with all those who don't hit it. And again, that's going to be every day. And they added a pick four this year, so I need to emphasize that it'll be on the late pick four. It used to be just the only pick four. But that promotion every day at Del Mar is going to be on the late pick four. And play it on your own, hit it, split $2,000 if Scott doesn't. But for those maybe looking for some information on the sequence, Scott's going to be blogging each day about his thoughts and, you know, how he's approaching trying to hit it, save TwinSpires.com some money by not having to split $2,000. But no matter what, even if he does hit it, there's a $1,000 bounty on the pick four, late pick four every day at Del Mar. So we're excited about that. And, of course, Saratoga, the stake schedule, just an embarrassment of riches, the best meet in the world as far as I'm concerned. And James, Vance, Kelly, and Jennifer – certainly going to be working extra hard to provide insight, whether it's shippers coming in, whether it's James' thoughts on the three-year-olds heading to the Travers, sort of the aftermath of what he does in the Triple Crown. Plenty of great information at bristnet.com for Saratoga. So you blink and it's Labor Day and it's over, but we're going to try to savor and enjoy it as much as possible.
Excellent. Excellent. And we'll look forward. I had reached out to James. I don't think we're going to get to him today, but I will have regular visits with James as well. We'll get both of you dueling banjos with handicapping, try to get Scott on. And Mike Barker, we should throw in Mike. I mean, he'll be scouring. He won't be limited to Saratoga and Del Mar, obviously. I mean, he's as liable to find a chalkbuster pick at Louisiana Downs and Ellis as anywhere, right?
Absolutely, yeah. He's a man after my own heart, and that's part of the reason I appreciate his approach. And obviously, certain days and times of the year, he's pretty limited in terms of what he can pick from. But I approach handicapping the same way. There's opportunities everywhere, and Mike has certainly made the most of some of those, whether it's, you know, Tuesday in January or the best in racing. You know, when he's landed on some of these big stakes scores. So that's the pick of the day, and that's available every day. But I know people especially look forward to when Saratoga ramps up. He usually does 2 to 3 picks a day, and at least one is from the spa.
And can't say enough about the work that Mike does and the, you know, looking for horses that are going to be at least double digits, at least 10, 12, 18, $20, it's not an easy charge. And with consistent regularity, he finds prices. You know, he's as vulnerable with his approach because he can only go by morning line and anticipated pricing based on the fields that he's looking at. He can't help it when horses scratch. He also can't help it when the computer groups find his horse as value and drive them from 8-1 to, you know, to 9-2. That's not his fault, but he does an amazing job.
Well, and there's, as we've seen in the multi-race wagers, and he provides wagering strategy as well, but even those looking for maybe a little push in the right direction to spice up the exotics, there are, you know, at times opportunities where even when horses get hit in the wind pool or even the exacta, et cetera, as we've discussed throughout the week in the aftermath of Friends Fire. I mean, the fact remains in the pick threes, he was, you know, that horse in particular was around 4 or 5-1, depending on which pick three. And even in the doubles was 7-2 or 4-1. So there's plenty of opportunity to use information from guys like Mike and, of course, Gus, who was active at Arlington and Belmont last week and is going to have some information for opening day at Del Mar and Saratoga next week. You know, same thing, you don't have to necessarily take every pick to win, but picking the right spots to use a horse that they're bullish on at 4 or 5-1 can make the difference in your day if you needed, you know, a nudge in the right direction.
Absolutely. Well, let's nudge you into the direction of some selections for the weekend. And by the way, you were ahead of the curve on Cacho ND. You wanted him when he should have gone to the lead in the Manhattan, and I'm going to assume that you had at least a taste of that Stars and Stripes result.
Yeah, the Arlington card was pretty good to me, in part because Daddy's little darling, who I mean, 9 to 5, people say, well, thanks a lot, 9 to 5. But, I mean, I really thought that was a filly who could have been even money and maybe not worth a win bet at odds on or anything. But at 9 to 5, I was pleased to use her and spread and
absolutely
around. So that was a good kickstart. And then, and the Manhattan would have been nice for a better trip, but didn't pick on top this time, but was certainly used with a stronger opinion earlier on the card.
Well, what about tomorrow?
Well, Indiana Grand, obviously the Oaks Derby double caught a lot of people's attention, and I'll get to that momentarily. But on Twin Spires to kickstart the day, we do have a 10%. Bet back on the pick five, and Indiana Grand introduced its pick five, long overdue, I think, but kudos to them for finally rolling it out. And it's 50 cents. It's on races 1 through 5. And on twinspires.com, if you played on Indiana Derby Day, you get 10% back on your bet if you lose. And if it hits, you get a 10% premium. So if you put 100 into it and lose, you get 10 back. But if you hit for, let's say, 1,000, you get 100. So pretty nice benefit. Definitely worth it more if you hit. And I definitely want to be live to number 3 Pioneer Spirit in the Schaefer Memorial. Seeking the Soul, certainly a worthy favorite, but he is off the bench. 124 off the bench, going a route of ground. I don't feel like he has to win this race. If he does, no one's going to be shocked at 3 to 5 morning line. But Pioneer Spirit, CM Reap, these names that I never know how to pronounce, from Ben Colebrook, is the only other potential speed in the race. And if Pioneer Spirit gets the jump on him, Seeking the Soul might find him awfully tough to catch. And Brad Cox scratched out of the Cornhusker for this race. So Pioneer Spirit in race 5, the Schaefer Memorial at Indiana Grand. I definitely hope I'm live to him to maybe upset that pick 5 and Seeking the Soul.
Nice.
And then moving on to the Derby and Oaks. So Oaks is actually the first of the two. I do think the Team Valor Horse is not only the one to beat, but probably the most likely winner on the whole card, if not the day. I mean, I just think the 3-year-old filly form has held up so well. Monomoy Girl, second to her, no slouch. Should have no issue stretching out to a mile on the 16th, being by violence out of a point given mare. So Talk Move to me is definitely a big single. I'm not going to use any backup. If she loses, I'm going to lose too. And Leparoo for Ortiz, maybe Jose's a better rider overall, but going a route in the Midwest, no problem with the jockey change with Ortiz not making the trip. The Indiana Derby, however, is a race I'm going to try to beat the favorite. King Zachary, to me, is maybe the most likely winner, but even then, I'm not entirely sure that's the case. And it's 6 to 5 morning line. You got to try to beat him when you're not positive. It's the first time I'm saying it, so I will be going with Title Ready on top. It's going to be a Bix pick, but I thought the Ohio Derby, I mean, ran evenly, got shuffled back a little bit, and came on again, beaten less than 2 lengths at 1 1/8. Maybe 1 1/16 is more this one's trip, and Title Ready can make up for Seeking the Soul's defeat earlier on the card, but I think getting Santana is a positive. I think the price is absolutely going to be right. And 1 1/16, this trip in Indiana, you definitely want to be close, and Title Ready shown an ability to be on the lead or press as needed. Maybe this is finally the coming out party of a horse who's taken a lot of money in his career and not necessarily backed it up. But at $20, I like him in the Indiana Derby.
Okay.
And then to wrap things up, I wanted to give a push in the Kent Stakes. I do think Elate looks really strong in the Delaware Handicap. I guess the 1 1/4 is a potential question off the layoff, but I just have a hard time not taking her, and it might just be a watch because with the layoff and the short price, I'm excited to see her come back, but it's really tough for me to make a case for anyone else. But McKent, I do like number 9 way early, 8-1 on the morning line for George Weaver. He's shown an ability to ship to this region before from New York. Penn Mile was okay behind Hawkish, who didn't necessarily light up that form in the Belmont Derby. We're talking about two totally different kinds of races here. And I think way early, if as long as there's some pace, which it looks like with Blame the Rider in there, Golden Brown, some horses that aren't necessarily risks to go gate to wire, but should set something spirited, especially with Blame the Rider drying outside. I think way early can get the right trip with Blinkers potentially being a little closer than need be without necessarily being right there on the lead. But I think at 8-1, way early is worth a stab considering the next race might chalk out.
Cool. All right.
That's my my tour of the, I guess I can't really say Midwest since we touched on Delaware, but obviously looking forward to Del Mar and Saratoga next week, but I definitely think there's some good opportunity this week in Indiana, especially with favorites being vulnerable in both the Schaefer and Indiana Derby.
I like it. And Ed, as always, appreciate it. I'll mention as well today, right at our website, Gus looked at the pick four at Ellis and at Arlington. So some Gus Alonso action today for your Friday. And Ed, we will talk next week. And Del Mar and Saratoga will be at hand.
Great great time to be a fan. Looking forward to discussing it.
At DeRosa, folks, EJXD2, and I'll apologize in the green room to Scully, who I had hoped to get to today. We'll save James for next week and make it up to him there. Meanwhile, let's take probably our last break of the morning and come back with Hammer. And then Joe Applebaum. I've got a lot to talk about with Joe, so let's get a visit in with Rick. I want him to quickly touch on the Delaware handicap and the grade system so that people understand, because the question has come up, as it did actually even with Jim Dunleavy's visit. All right? So Hammer next and Joe Applebaum on this busy Friday at the races. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Fun in the Sun is ExpressBet Summer Treasure. If you can't make it to the spa or where the surf meets the turf, do the next best thing and play Saratoga and Del Mar with ExpressBet. And while you're at it, don't miss ExpressBet's $100,000 Fun in the Sun handicapping competition. Play Saturdays by making a live $10 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. Each week, top players collect $4,000 for first, $2,000 for second, and $1,000 for third. Plus, based on cumulative earnings throughout the season, the top four finishers will win Pegasus World Cup Handicapping Championship seats, a $12,000 value each. Pre-registration is now open for account holders only. Don't miss this fantastic opportunity to shoot for some cool Fun in the Sun Saturday summer cash with ExpressBet Saratoga and Del Mar. Visit ExpressBet.com now to open an account and for complete Fun in the Sun details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes into hour three, and my own preference for California introductions, and Hammer joins us. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, you can't shake that tune, can you?
No, it's my favorite. I'm sorry.
It's all right. But anything with California, and it's good.
Exactly. Exactly.
We haven't run in 2 weeks, and I've never been more tired in my life. Unbelievable. I think when you have time to think about how tired you are, you get tired. When you don't, you just keep going. Anyway, it's been a good break so far.
Well, when we talk next week, we'll be a day into the Del Mar season. And are you going down for opening day? You usually do?
Actually, 2 days into it. Actually, we're going down. Gina and Lindsay are going down for the week starting Sunday, and I'll go down, probably go down Wednesday, but I won't go. I doubt I'll go to the races on Wednesday. Stay away from that, and then go probably Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So I will be down there next week when we talk. And so we're just, I'm at home now, but we're just starting to see some of the horses ship. I think yesterday was the first day they were, Del Mar opened its gate. So as of last night, there was a few hundred horses down at Del Mar, and then through the weekend, the majority will be out. And then our track, last day to train at Santa Anita's a week from yesterday, so the 19th. So everybody will be fresh, fit, and dangerous, ready to roll. I think they take entries on Saturday for opening day, Wednesday. And judging by, talking to Andy Harrington and Gary Young in the mornings when I cruise around up there and they're clocking it, they're telling me that the number of horses working is, about 10-15% higher than at this time last year. So, meaning there's a lot more horses, looks like, getting ready. And hopefully that means a good start to the meet. And, around here, when Del Mar does good, then we do good following it. So, really looking forward to having that going and being able to go down and kind of go to the races in shorts and a T-shirt the way it was meant to be, especially at Del Mar.
Well, on a timely note, our man Joe Valenti, he's going to be out at Del Mar, and Joe wants a couple of your dining options, Hammer, for those that are headed to Oceanside.
To Oceanside, I still say the same thing. I tried to rename that Oceanside handicap the Oceanport from the opening day feature for a long time. Dining. Oh, there's a lot of places there. I mean, there's Red Tractons right across the street. The Pomplamoose for some eclectic dining, all kinds of stuff in there. That's really right across the street as well. My favorite lunch place, of course, is Pizza Nova. That's off the Solana Beach exit, right off the 5. Best salad, pizza, combo, pasta, you can find around Pizza Nova. There's a Hideaway breakfast place, which you have to ask how to get to, and only the locals know it. It's just a little kind of a shack in the middle of a parking lot, and they just serve breakfast, called the Hideaway Cafe. For breakfast, there's, the restaurant, the Brigantine, right up there for fish tacos. And if you leave the races early and you get a good spot on the balcony there, you can watch the last race from there. Sabika is one of my favorite steak places right in town there. Oh, gosh, there's the Pacifica Grill, which is in town as well. Gosh, you're making me think. I haven't been there for a while. But a ton of places. You really can't go wrong. I'll tell you, literally not that long ago, 20, 25 years ago, Delmar was, you know, just a sleepy little town. You had Bullies, and you had a couple other joints here and there, and it really wasn't the place that it is now. You know, top quality restaurants up. I mean, it's at the point now where if you don't make it, you're not good. It's the name has changed by the time you got back there the next year. So a lot of good places there. Prime, a good steakhouse. So you really can't go wrong. And I'm talking all these places are within a mile of the racetrack, so you don't have to go too far. And that's key down there. Anyone going to Del Mar, if you're going for a day, a week, however long, try to get as close to the track as you possible, the track and the beach. Because the traffic, it's nuts, though, getting around down there. I mean, I know when I moved there, Gina and I, when we were getting our places, I mean, we would be no more than 5 miles away because you just can't get there, even the beach route. So try and get as close as you can, and at least to wherever your destination is. And you'll enjoy your stay a lot more, not having to deal with the traffic. A couple of Mexican restaurants, Fidel's. Is there, and Tony's Jackal, two of the best Mexican restaurants around, and believe it or not, they're right next to each other, right next door. They fight over the parking spaces there, but two good spots. Once again, in Solana Beach, very close to the racetrack. So, geez, a lot of good places to dine. And then, of course, if you want to dip into the Gaslamp District in San Diego, that's crazy. And opening weekend there, actually opening week, Comic-Con is going on. I think they start on the 19th, the Thursday. So they're going on 19, 20, 21, 22. I'm telling you, I would beg to say there's probably not a hotel left in town between the Del Mar opening and Comic-Con opening. So if you can survive missing opening weekend, you'll be a little bit more comfortable all the way around.
Interesting. And I'm going to throw in, I can't let the dining options go without my friends at Milton's, Barry Halpern and David and Craig and everybody right across.
Great breakfast spot. Deli, Milton's Deli, fantastic.
Yep. Big push. Go ask for Barry. Tell Barry Steve Bick sent you. And the boys from Milton's, who originally were the boys from Chicago Brothers, for those that are old enough to remember Chicago Brothers deep dish pizza in San Diego.
Yeah, they do. Great spot. I mean, that's another, it's probably great there for lunch, but at the lunchtime, I'm usually at the track. So I breakfast
exactly.
there.
So breakfast.
Occasionally there. Very, very relaxing spot to have breakfast.
Hammer, I need you to do one business duty here before Joe Applebaum joins us. People asking about the Del Cap and what would have to happen with this good group, including a late? What has to happen for Delaware to get the grade one back? How many years in a row of a field like this would score points? Give everybody a quick overview.
Well, you know, I don't have my books in front of me. I don't, but I'll tell you, just in general, and like I said, literally, I don't have the numbers. I'm not in that world right now. But generally, it's very hard to get into the grade one club, and it's kind of hard to get out of it. And what I've seen over the years, when there is a reversal, it happens quicker. It doesn't happen at all. In other words, it wasn't that long ago, obviously, it was grade one. And so the farther we get away from it, the harder it will be to get back in. It's just the way it is. So it obviously is very close. So like I said, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but you just keep pounding away at it. And it has a better chance the closer it is to when they got taken down. So I have to maybe in a week or two, I'll have the numbers in front of me. I can be a little bit more explicit on it, but right, I just don't have it in front of me to go over.
No problem. I just
you just got to keep keep pounding. You know what I mean? And you know that division, that Chilean mare long on the dirt division, is just thinner and thinner, and there's just so few horses at the top, and they tend to go to a race where they're the top one's the only one in it, and you get that one good one and you know four or five other ones, and if you can get two or three of those good ones, then you really move up. That's the deal with that division.
Well, certainly this group will score some points, and those that would like to see Delaware get the grading back, another one like this probably would do enough. And for those that don't understand how this works, if you go to TOBA's website, TOBA.org, T-O-B-A, Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association, go to the graded stakes section, and it is voluminous. Explains everything that goes into the grading of races. For those that think it's arbitrary, it's not.
And we try and on the show here we try and give as much of an inside deal of what we do, and as we get closer, actually to be in Saratoga in early August for another meeting, not a voting meeting, but just a catch up meeting, and maybe we can talk a little bit more then. But I have. I feel so good about the committee that, you know, whatever we walk out of there doing is what was the right thing at that time. So I have no problem talking about it as much as I'm able to talk about it and let people in on how it's done and why it's done and things like that. So that's great. I wanted to get one thing in that I forgot to mention last night. Adrian Valenzuela, he came in to see me on closing day, and let me tell you, this kid came in with his dad. Of course, he's in a wheelchair, and he had a smile from ear to ear. It just the brought tears to your eyes just hearing him talk. How positive he is! He was in Colorado doing some progressive type stimulation to try and get things something working, and they're going to be continued to go around the country and try and get ahead of this thing, and there's some progressive procedures that maybe can be done. But I'm telling you, the attitude of this kid, he couldn't thank us enough, us meaning the racing industry, for stepping up and helping him and his family out at when he went down there a few months ago. Of course, we had a few fundraisers and the industry came together as it is known to do, but I tell you, it really puts things in perspective when you see a young kid like that in a wheelchair coming in and thanking you for things you've done for him. So we continue to wish him well, but he's had the right spirit, and you know what, he's going to be just fine. It was really soothing and kind of comforting to see that, and kind of gives you make things not so bad in your life when you see the kid walking in and being rolled in with a smile, and his dad there right behind him with a smile too. So thanks to everyone out there that helped him along. He's very appreciative.
Nice. I'm glad you provided the update, and that was a very, very difficult circumstance.
Like I said, it made me feel a lot better, just being able to talk about it and see him. So, these guys are, I tell you, resilient. It's just great. And one more thing, I want to just follow up on something I texted or tweeted out the other day, or yesterday, I guess it was, listening to you and Tony talk, and then Haskin ramble on about this stuff, and I got to thinking about a few things too. So I just threw this thing out on Twitter, and it got me thinking. Some of the best riding colonies at certain meets, throughout the country and throughout the years. And the first one that came to my mind for some reason was the 1998 Gulfstream Park meet. And oddly enough, I had a poster in the office in my office across the hall, and I had to get up on a chair to look at it. And I'm going to read off the names that were there. And this is the winter meet at Gulfstream Park in 1998. And you got to remember, like in the 90s there, when Florida was fighting over the dates, whoever got those winter dates, those January to March dates, that was the prime time I'm going to say that some of those Gulfstream Park meets during that time, I know when I was there working there, were that might have been the best meet in the country from day one to a close. We used to run from like the first couple of days in January to mid-March, 6 days a week, something like 60-some days. And I'll tell you what, you never knew when you were going to see a star come out on that track. And it was when I first moved back east, I moved back there in 1989, and I would drive back to California summertime and work at Golden Gate, and then finally stayed out in New Jersey for a while. And Gina moved out there, and I couldn't figure out, you know, so winter would come, and then, you know, okay, where'd everybody go? We couldn't figure out, what's going on here? Everybody go to Florida. What's in Florida? And actually, it was half what was in Florida, and half they just wanted to get out of New Jersey or the Northeast and get down to the sunshine. And boy, I tell you what, it really opened up my eyes to racing there. But I'm just going to go over this. I'm going to read this jockey colony off real quick. And it's pretty wild. And I know we have some great ones here in California, but I wanted to go elsewhere. But so here, this is the names that were on the poster. So you had Herbie Castillo Jr., who's a local guy. Hall of Famer Jerry Bailey, Hall of Famer Early Fires, Hall of Famer John Velasquez, Robbie Davis, Randy Romero, Ivar Koa, Shane Sellers, Hall of Famer Jose Santos, Gary Boulanger, Hall of Famer Pat Day, Joe Bravo, Wigberto Ramos, Hall of Famer Mike Smith, Hall of Famer Julie Crone, Jean-Luc Samin, and one guy that wasn't on the calendar, but just started riding there, I think, the year before, Hall of Famer Javier Castellano. Now, that was the core. Now, these are guys who just rode weekends. These are the guys that rode there every day. Actually, in fact, I looked at a few charts just to double check. You know, I was going on Wednesdays and Thursdays. These guys are the guys that rode there every single day. And I tell you, that's quite a lineup. And that's where I really got to. The jocks room there was right next to the racing office. So you could literally go through a door and, you know, go eat, have a sandwich over there, go to the bathroom over there with these guys. And tell you what, that's what I really learned. And these guys were the top. So I'll tell you, it was, but anyway, I'm sure there's other meets that were close to that, but that one just stood out for me. It was unbelievable. You look at these, third race on a Thursday, and here's 10 of these guys riding, you know, riding lights out to get the money. But anyway, you got me thinking when you're talking to Tony, and like you say, it's amazing in this game how one thing will spark your
oh, yeah.
Memory and get going on stuff.
Absolutely. Well, Hammer, we're not thinking behind as much as on this Friday as what's coming next week. Del Mar, Saratoga, and the summer will be in full swing when we talk next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Steve, and happy summer to you. And Tina, I hope you had fun on the boat yesterday.
Oh, it was great. We had a tremendous time.
All right. Well, maybe we'll do it when I get out there.
Now you're talking.
Call the captain.
All right.
Call
you got
captain.
It.
All right. All right.
Rick Hammerly, everybody. Away they go on Twitter, and away we stay right here and waiting in the wings for a pre-Saratoga conversation. Joe Applebaum, and of course we talked to Joe. We've talked to Joe a couple of times in recent memory, notably off of his Breeders' Cup Challenge victory. Joe, a major player on the contest front, an owner, a breeder, and the head of the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. And happy to get Joe here to cover a bunch of topics that have kind of piled up through the spring and into the early summer. Joe, good morning.
Hey, Steve, how are you? Just
excellent.
Want to note, I'm coming to you from one of my favorite places on earth on a kind of quiet morning with Twilight Racing, but the backyard at Belmont Park.
Very nice. And we were together on Saturday for a little bit for the tremendous Stars and Stripes card, that the big send-off and kind of the wrap-up. There's still obviously tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday before the scene shifts to Saratoga. But lots to think about and discuss before we kick off the Saratoga season. And, Joe, before we get into a couple of contentious areas that you've been dealing with, explain to people the division of responsibilities between what NYFA does, what the New York Racing Association does, what the New York Gaming Commission does, and how you know, not everything that happens in the in the public eye is all just NYRA or just the horsemen.
Sure.
Or because it's something that people should understand.
Sure. Well, the first thing, I hope we don't have to get into the contentiousness of the Firenze Fire debate. I've heard a couple of your guests talk about that already, so I'm going to get into some of the other things. So NYSA, which is the Horsemen's Association, our job's pretty clear. We represent all the horsemen in New York. So that's anyone who's been an owner or a trainer at a NYRA racetrack, you know, Aqueduct, Saratoga, Belmont. Finger Lakes has their own horsemen's group. And our mission is really to do a few things. One is to provide philanthropic support for the backstretch community. And those are all the workers who work for your trainers on a daily basis. That chews up the vast majority of our budget, and there's a real prime focus for us. Our second job is to advocate on behalf of the horsemen, whether that's increases to the purse account, whether it's for better racing conditions, whether it's for promoting NYRA and our tracks here as a good place to race, or that advocacy can go in a lot of directions. But we're here as the horseman's representative for dealings with both NYRA and the Gaming Commission or the breeders or whoever. The last thing, if I would kind of sum things up, is that we're interested in the general health of the game. So we're really interested in aftercare. We think that's important. We're involved in medication discussions and research on best practices for our horses and, also for our people management. So that's what we do. Now, the two groups we deal with on a regular basis is NYRA, the New York Racing Association, and it's their job to put on the races. They put on the show at Aqueduct, Belmont, and Saratoga, and they recruit their athletes from our ownership and trainer ranks. So we provide the talent, they provide the production, and, you know, either live or over the air, we're putting on a show. Now, we're both regulated by the New York State Gaming Commission, which is a function of the government, under Governor Cuomo's leadership. And they basically write the rules and regulations of racing as to all sorts of issues, both on the gambling side, on the eligibility to race side, on aftercare efforts, on conditions at the track, et cetera. And those three-way communications are really key to making sure that, you know, at 1 o'clock, 6 days a week in Saratoga, and 1:30 on other days, and 3:05 here today, that the show goes on.
There's a couple of headlines this week in regards to what have been issues involving the jocks, and this is maybe a perfect distinction for you to make between what NYFA's negotiations with the jocks involves versus what NYRA has to do in their dealings with the riders.
Sure. So let me talk about what we do. So our negotiation with the jockeys is really fairly straightforward. It mostly has to do with pay scale. Okay. As we all, or I think everyone's fairly aware, 95% of the pay scale is already predetermined, right? The jockeys are incented to win so that the jockeys, trainers, and owners are all aligned, all have their interests aligned correctly. So they get a percentage of money if the horse they're riding wins. If it comes in second, it comes in third. There's then something called a losing mount fee, meaning if they don't run 1, 2, 3, what do they get paid? So we renegotiated that after about a 10-year stretch with the jocks this year to try to align things with the new purse distribution system that NYRA put in place, that's going to be put in place for Saratoga. And I think The jockeys were very happy to get a bump in the losing mount fees, and we were happy to have the ability to restructure things so that we can make things more competitive for our owners and trainers who are maybe not winning but are being competitive and running third, fourth, and fifth. We want to see a larger share of the pie go to them so that we can keep more outfits going, that guys find it more economical and have a better value proposition when they're owning and training their horses. There's a whole bunch of other issues that come up with the jocks. Some of them fairly technical between the Jockeys Guild and NYRA. That's really their kind of purview, so I'll let them worry about that. The one other area that we have input on but are not a signatory to would be the weight scale. And that's kind of gone back and forth. I think we're getting to a better place or a good place on that with the jockeys and NYRA. And we're a party to those conversations, but we're not a decision maker in that conversation. So that kind of gives people an idea of what we have influence on, what we can actually decide, what we're really not influential in.
Well, and to me, it's worthwhile, much like the conversation we had with Paul Matisse regarding the computer batch wagerers and how that works and the backstory behind, you referenced, in fact, the Dwyer. I wanted people to understand that. I want them to understand that it feels like so often, Joe, something comes up, whether it's an incident. I can think to the canceling of the race card a couple of Sundays ago, that people right away assailing, NYRA wasn't anything to do with NYRA. NYRA was ready to run. The stewards made that call. There's different entities that are at the source and at the center of decisions and policy making and regulation, and understanding those elements goes a long way to understanding how the game works.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And let's be fair. We're trying to drag our game into the 21st century, right? One of the great enjoyments of this game is that much like baseball, it's a kind of an old-fashioned pastime, and that's one of its great strengths. You know, the pageantry, the colors, the kind of slow-moving nature of it. But quite frankly, the game needs to compete in a modern entertainment, gaming, sports, fiercely competitive world. And look, as a business, there's a lot of moving parts here. There's human athletes at stake. There's human workers at stake. There's equine athletes whose health is at stake. And, there's a lot of opinions, as everyone in this game knows. And, these are the sort of things. It's not so easy, some of the decisions. In retrospect, they all seem easy. But in real time, there's a lot of conversations between a lot of parties to try to get it right. And we don't always do, but there's a lot of people working hard to try to get it right.
Talking to Joe Applebaum, Joe operates in virtually every capacity that someone around the sport can operate. He breeds, he owns, he sells commercially. He is a major horse player, contest player, and a Breeders' Cup Challenge winner. And Joe's election as the head of the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, just a perfect scenario for those of us that do the same kinds of things and are involved in racing in New York. Joe, a wonderful heir to the work that Rick Violette did for many years. There is, in fact, an opportunity, Joe, coming up, 10 days actually from today, the 23rd, a week from Monday, the general membership meeting. And for those that may be new owners and people that are just coming in, as well as those that are veteran experienced horsemen and of any capacity, they can attend the meeting. What's going to be covered in that session?
Sure. So it's going to be at Phasic Tipton in Saratoga, obviously. on Monday the 23rd. I believe we're starting at 11 a.m. We're going to have lunch. So if you're an owner, trainer, wannabe owner, come on out. We'd love to see you. We're going to do a few things there. It's kind of like a little state of New York racing seminar, and then we'll have some lunch and some chance to meet new people and ask some questions and hopefully provide some answers. But we're going to release our first ever annual report from NYSA that kind of details the work we're doing, our different backstretch programs, the advocacy work, what we see are some of the challenges facing us in New York, what initiatives that we're working on now to meet those challenges and to drum up new business for people. We'll talk about year-round racing. We'll talk about workers' compensation. We'll talk about BEST. All the fun topics everyone wants to talk about. And we really urge you to come out if you want to learn about the organization, if you want to be a better informed owner or trainer in New York as to what is actually going on in the conversations with gaming and NYRA and readers and all the other groups, you should come out. It'll be about an hour of your time, and I guarantee you'll come away more knowledgeable.
And for all the details of really for everything NYTHA related, there is the website, NYTHA.com, NYTHA.com, and that includes the Take Two program that Andy Belfiore and the staff administer do an unbelievable job having the second career. We just retired a horse, in fact, through Take Two, and this will be our second one that we've sent out into another career. Just a great, great job. And we'll talk more with Joe as the summer unfolds. Joe, a couple of other topics that since Paul Matisse's name came up, you broached something with me the other day, which was really an interesting, I thought, a discussion that I really hadn't thought of. And that is what, for some reason, has manifested itself a to me kind of bizarre narrative that somehow horse players and horsemen should be at odds, and it's a interesting discussion. And as soon as you said it, I kind of recognized what you meant.
Right. So I've thought and talked a lot about this. Both with Paul and a lot of other guys, there's I'll call it a false dichotomy that goes on, that there is some inherent tension between horsemen and horse players, mostly over takeout, right? And that we're opposed to each other. And I understand how some people could feel that, but when horsemen's groups often, over the past 20 or 30 years, have been resistant to takeout changes. Obviously horse players feel aggrieved because our takeout rate is, far, far in excess of other similar sports or other similar gaming opportunities, i.e. poker, i.e. sports wagering, etc. And so, there's points to be made on both sides. What no one really talks about, and I've suffered through, I don't know why I do it, through many an inane Twitter conversation about this, but what no one has really done the research on and talked about is what are the appropriate levels to balance everyone's interests? Because everyone's interest needs to be represented in this case, otherwise you're going to have a poor equilibrium, which is going to do us all a disservice. But more than that, and this is, I think, the point I was making to you, Steve, is that there's no different camps of people. Most of the major gamblers I know, like Paul and others, are also horsemen, right? And just about every major horseman I know is a fairly serious gambler. So it's not like there's like these very defined groups driving the agenda, that there's all these horse players out there who aren't owning horses. The great volume of wagering is happening through owners of horses. And there are owners of horses, guys who are perceived not as gamblers, they're betting a lot more than you think they are. So it's, in many ways, it's one in the same group. And, you know, like, you know, through different publications and, of course, social media, there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of misrepresentation of who those core constituencies are. When there's so much overlap, the Venn diagram looks more like one rectangle or one circle than two competing ones.
And there's also very much like what we where we started the conversation in terms of understanding the structure. There's also some components that the casual player and the casual observer of the sport just don't necessarily have an opportunity to understand, which is the, you know, the layers involved of,
well,
you know, bricks and mortar
exactly.
and yep. expense, you know, where the distribution flow is in terms of dollars and cents. And, you know, it's been referred to as the inverted pyramid, and there's been a lot of corrections that the public aren't necessarily that they aren't necessarily seeing, and that involves the fees between bricks and mortar and the ADWs. There's some correction that's going on, and maybe we're getting closer to the opportunity to discuss optimal takeout rates with some things coming into a better alignment.
Yeah, I hope that's the case. I think, look, if we know now, or if we knew back 25 or 30 years ago when the ADW system was being developed, what we know now, we clearly would have, the tracks in particular and horsemen's groups secondarily would have insisted on a different rate structure, right? Like, no one understood at the time, or very few people understood, the value that the signal would hold 10, 20, 30 years later. So that whole system got out of whack. And as you said, there's been some clawbacks over time, and things are getting better. And it gives us the opportunity maybe to do some more flexible takeout and to experiment and do some interesting things. I think we've seen that in the last 5 years with the Pick 5 takeout, which is certainly a breath of fresh air and has been a good revenue source. But I think we should even think more broadly, and Paul brought up this point the other day, and I couldn't agree more with him, is that I think the racetracks and the ADWs need to put better technology tools into the hands of the everyday horse player, right? We can't look backwards. Right, we all have a tendency in this business to look back at the 1970s or 1980s and be nostalgic for some better time. And to be honest, I don't know if it really was better, but it was certainly different. But we can only look forward, and we really need to put tools in place that bring our game and our wagering end of the game into a modern era. And when you see what's available in other wagering opportunities, when you see what's available in the entertainment world or the sports world, we need to be matching or exceeding those things in a way that I think there's inklings of that happening in the business now, but we could certainly accelerate and invest in those processes more.
Joe Applebaum, always a provocative, interesting conversation, and next time we talk, we're going to do some straightforward handicapping, and we'll let Joe's opinion.
I love it. I don't get to do that enough anymore, Steve. They get me in too many conference calls and meetings now, but there's nothing I like better than sitting in the backyard on top of one of those picnic tables and scoping out a race.
Well, you can scope out everything that Joe has to offer, J.A. Goods on Twitter, and I promise a opportunity to let Joe handicap on a Friday from our broadcast position at Saratoga. Again, Monday the 23rd at the Humphrey Finney Pavilion at the grounds of Fasig Tipton for the NYTHA membership meeting. And even if you're just learning, come and join us, and we'll see Joe there, and I'll be there after the show. Joe, I appreciate it.
Steve, my pleasure. Thanks again, and hope to see everyone up in Saratoga.
Joe Applebaum, folks, and Rick Hammerly, Ed DeRosa, Nick Tamaro, Marcus Hirsch, Jim Dunleavy. A good weekend of racing on tap. And Gus, in fact, looked at Ellis and Arlington today. I posted already. It's at the website, stevepick.com, in the handicapping section. A reminder, Delaware and Belmont pick four tomorrow, the 8th and the 9th of both venues. And it'll be as it'll all be shown on the Belmont Live TV show tomorrow. And I'll be back with you Monday as Del Mar and Saratoga Week upon us. Good luck this weekend, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Fun in the Sun is ExpressBet's summer treasure. If you can't make it to the spa or where the surf meets the turf, do the next best thing and play Saratoga and Del Mar with ExpressBet. And while you're at it, don't miss ExpressBet's $100,000 Fun in the Sun handicapping competition. Play Saturdays by making a live $10 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. Each week, top players collect $4,000 for first, $2,000 for second, and $1,000 for third. Plus, based on cumulative earnings throughout the season, the top four finishers will win Pegasus World Cup Handicapping Championship seats, a $12,000 value each. Pre-registration is now open for account holders only. Don't miss this fantastic opportunity to shoot for some cool, fun-in-the-sun Saturday summer cash with ExpressBet Saratoga and Del Mar. Visit ExpressBet.com now to open an account and for complete fun-in-the-sun details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.